Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at cybersecurity on the show today. Great to have back Jesse LeGru, one of our regular guests, to talk about this. He's an information security architect, works on a Madison College's technology services group, and he works with designing and developing and implementing security standards and protocols. So the perfect person to have talk about it. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. What questions do you have about protecting your accounts? Are you having a tech problem? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jesse LeGru, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
You know, I've had many, many times where I've gotten emails or something on Facebook from a friend on Facebook. I just had this happen the other day. Do not, I forget what the wording was, but somebody had hacked her Facebook and was using it for not good reasons.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part about that one is it could be that somebody compromised your friend's account, or somebody also created a duplicate account that looked like your friend's, which is another common tactic, is to, you know, use different social engineering tactics to make you believe you're getting it from somebody you know, but you could actually be getting it from somebody that compromised your friend's account, or they create one that actually looks very similar. So if you do notice, if you get friend requests from people that, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm friends with them already, they do have the same picture, a lot of the content looks the same, it's very likely they actually created a new account to try to social engineer and get information from other people and connect in ways that, you know, make you think it's the person you know, but it's actually not.
I bit on that one about 3 years ago. I had that issue where I thought, gee, I thought I was friends with her already, and I clicked it again, and then we had to go through some rigmarole. Why do hackers want to take over the accounts?
There's a variety of reasons. Usually it's to get data of some sort. It could be for identity theft, or it could just be a mechanism to get data from people you know. Usually it's a little bit more general. They're just trying to get data in a variety of ways. There's a lot of reasons they could try to get that data. They could, you know, a ransom is one of those, although a lot of times some of the ransoms are actually fake. We'll get phishing emails on fake ransoms. But usually they're trying to get data. In the end, they're trying to get money, usually in some way, shape, or form, or to disseminate information using your account.
So signs that your account has, your own account has been hacked?
There's a lot of good ways to know. You know, it's different for every service, but if you get people telling you, hey, I got a friend request from you, is this legitimate? usually that's a telltale sign. If you do see unusual activity, that's a good sign. Or, you know, you didn't post something, you're getting emails that don't look familiar. Really anything that's out of the ordinary from the day-to-day is kind of what you're trying to, is an indicator that you might have some compromise. Or a friend of yours may also have a compromise.
This is just recently as well. I got a message from supposedly from a good old friend, and the tone of the message just didn't fit the person. So I'm ignoring that one.
Yep, and that's actually one of the things I always recommend to other people when they're looking at emails. The best thing you can do is understanding what normal looks like. And when you're talking to new people, it's difficult to really know what their mannerisms are, how their grammar is, how their spelling is.
Yeah.
It could actually be very normal for somebody to write you an email that's in half-broken sentences, really awful punctuation, and then one day you get this very well-formed message. That could actually be an indicator that it's something to be concerned about. Most people are interested because, well, you know, the language is a little bit off, the punctuation's off, some of the sentences don't make sense, but each situation is different, and if somebody's trying to masquerade as another person, it's just good to know, what does that person normally act like, and is it different? And always contacting the person. Did you send me this message?
Yeah.
It seems a little weird, in a way that is different from the original communication mechanism. So if somebody sends you an email, don't send an email back. Did you actually send this? Because if their account is compromised, they could simply somebody else could be replying. So use a different communication mechanism, whether it's, you know, a phone call, a text, something outside of that original communication stream.
So what do you do if you're hacked? You know, you've found out, oh, crap, I'm hacked. How do you fix it?
It depends on how you want to look
at
fixed.
On what you got, I suppose.
So if you want to take control of your account again, you know, the biggest thing is to reset your password and, if you can, enable multi-factor authentication. So multi-factor authentication is something that allows you to verify that you're you beyond just a password. So that could be using an application on your smartphone. It could be a text message. It could be a variety of mechanisms. But it gives the service provider extra proof that you are who you say you are. And that'll help get control of your account. One item that's going to be useful as well is email addresses are probably one of the most important things to safeguard, because if you do lose your password or if you have an issue, many times Facebook or any other service is going to send you a link to your email. Well, if somebody has control of your inbox, they have the capability then of potentially resetting your password. So protecting your email account in those really sensitive vaults where they might use that communication mechanism to help you recover your account is going to be really important. So ensuring you have, I would say, have multi-factor authentication on everything, but definitely have it in places where they might use that as a way to reset your access to a different account.
But can you get multi-factor for everything?
You
have to have the other end.
Yeah, the other end will have to have that capability of enabling multi-factor authentication. For some people, it might actually be yes. But you can do, I'd say, most of the sensitive accounts that you have out there, you can usually have multi-factor authentication. I'd say it's common for every bank. If you're looking at a bank and they actually don't have it, I would consider a different bank. It really is a common service that's out there, whether it's by text or app, to have multi-factor authentication. So if you can't get it from your existing service provider, you might actually want to look for a different service provider that does have that feature, just because there are a lot of them out there.
Ransomware is another big cyber problem. I know there was a dental plan backup program or something that fell to this, but there have been a lot of them.
Yeah, and in ransomware, there's a few different options or a few different ways that you can kind of have this ransomware affect you. The most common that people see is you have a program, it somehow got installed or is running on your computer, and it encrypts your entire file system. And in addition, it might encrypt the other computers on your network, meaning that you can't actually read your own data. So it's effectively like somebody shredded the data or locked it up in a place where you'll never be able to read it without them giving you the keys to read that data. So it's essentially full data loss, unless you have something like a backup. So a lot of the best practices that we have in terms of making sure you have a secure password, make sure that you have backups, those can help in the event that if you do have a breach, you can recover quickly or you can recover at all. So if you do have something where you have ransomware and they encrypted your entire computer, if you have a backup and it's disconnected and it didn't get encrypted too, you can actually recover. So having a backup is something that I'd recommend for everyone, and it can help you in the case of ransomware as long as that backup is doesn't have the capability of being encrypted in the same way.
So, and you can have it done to your personal computer or some businesses, obviously. I mentioned that dental data. What is this, PerkSoft or something, or PercySoft?
Yeah, and that was one where a lot of different devices had the ransomware and encrypted a variety of systems, and it kind of got through one centralized mechanism. And to recover from that, really, the easiest way is backups. The more frequently you back up, ensuring that you have that backup offline means that you can recover quicker. If you don't have those backups, it can be a lot more challenging to recover if you encrypt everything. If you have no backups, there's a chance you might not be able to recover at all. And one of the things that seems like a really good option is to pay the ransom. And this is something I think a lot of people have differing opinions about in terms of whether you would pay the ransom or not. one, there's, you know, there's no guarantee you're going to get your data back if you pay the ransom. So that's, you know, one of the risks. Many organizations or individuals have paid ransoms in the past, and they've gotten all their stuff back. So there is some evidence to state maybe this is a viable option. Everyone is going to kind of need to make their own choice, but there really is no guarantee that you're going to get your data back if you pay the ransom. The best thing you can do is be prepared for the time if that does happen. So having data backups is one important protective mechanism.
And, you know, just to think about that, if you do pay that, it's encouraging people to do it more.
Right, exactly. And a lot of people, they really just want their data back. They don't even care.
Yeah.
You know, I want my data back. I can pay $200 in Bitcoin and get all of my data back because I literally have no other backup. I have no way to get my data back in any other way or shape or form. So for some people, it is an option that they're going to pursue, but there's really no guarantee you're going to do it. I would just recommend have a backup, know where that backup is, and also have it offline. So if your computer gets encrypted, it's not going to, you know, affect your backup data either.
Talking today with Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Great to have him on. We started out talking a bit about getting hacked and what to do about it with him. We'll take your other computer questions as well if you'd like to join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer today with our guest, Jesse LeGrew of Madison College. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in today. Questions for him, give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. There are a lot of, I've had this happen to me probably five times at least. I've gotten fake emails that they want me to, you know, they've got some, maybe it's an old password or something. And they say, okay, we've got your computer, and if you don't pay, we're gonna, you know, ruin you.
Yeah, and most of the time, those are just simple scams. They're just trying to scare you into giving them money or to pay some kind of ransom. And those are very common, where you really have not been compromised in any way. They just want to scare you enough to send the money because you are afraid there could be some kind of issue. You might even think. You'll know in the back of your mind, there is no reason I have to fear from anything that they're saying, but I'm still scared enough where I don't want it out there, whether it's true or falsified in any way. But people just try to scare you into reacting. And so that's the another thing to look out for is when you see an email and you kind of get that feeling where you're a little scared or afraid or you feel like you really want to react very quickly. Those are the times to pause and to think a little bit more. We all get stressful emails from one time or another for a variety of reasons. But being able to just pause and like, okay, what is this really saying? Is this something I have to worry about? And thinking about it before reacting is really important because a lot of these scammers are counting on somebody to be scared and to do something that they wouldn't normally do to put themselves at higher risk or to really go against what they should normally be processing. Mm-hmm. They want that emotional reaction, not that well thought out reaction.
I remember getting one of those. The first one I got kind of scared me. What I did was I went to my bank. I went to some various places and changed my changed my password and all that. And just you know what? I'm just gonna do that just for my own peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. And there's definitely nothing wrong with changing your account passwords or any of those security mechanisms when you can. It makes it a lot easier when you have things like a password manager that tells you these are the accounts I have. So even if it's not storing your passwords, you know if you wanted to reset the password for every single account you have a documentation source that states these are the accounts I have where you can go and reset them one at a time. And while the guidelines for password changes have kind of been modified from change it every 30 to 90 days to, you know, you can wait several years, just make sure you have a very long password, is very different. People are, I think, are still kind of in the mindset, because a lot of security professionals have been telling them, you need to change your password every 30 days. It needs to be alphanumeric characters. You basically don't want to be able to remember it. And that's changing. So having a password manager and a way to manage your passwords helps significantly. So if you do just decide, I'm going to just be safe and reset it anyway, you can go ahead and do that in a more easy fashion.
Gary in Chippewa Falls, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. See, I did something with a computer that I had. I have a small business that I had, and I had all my information on my main computer. And then for my emails, I just used a little cheap laptop that I picked up used. And I did get a virus at one time, and I just threw the laptop away. I mean, it was like, it cost me $100 for the computer, but it was a... And that way, I don't know if that protect me and everything, but it sure kept all my data from being compromised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of ways to kind of go about it. Sometimes burning everything down can help you be sure that nothing's going to happen. But there's a lot of repair companies, too, that can help to either recover data, clean things up, or at least tell you forensically what actually happened. Was any data lost, or is there anything you have to worry about? But that's one option.
That definitely is. Thanks, Gary. Kate in Appleton. Hi.
Hi. This morning I got caught up in the advertisement of win $1,000 Amazon gift card. And, you had to do like a little survey and stuff. And so far, I don't know if anything's happened other than my computer isn't rebooting. Would you suggest that I bring it in to get repaired or call like Apple support, or... How do I stop whatever process is happening?
If you think there is something on your computer that is actually running that you don't want, I'd actually recommend probably going directly into an Apple store, because they're going to be able to help you right away. It also might be something where the behavior you're seeing is completely unrelated to the survey that you filled out. But to be certain, I would always recommend having an expert take a look and just verify if everything looks normal.
Peace of mind alone is worth that.
Yes.
I mean, the money, the little bit of money you're going to spend on that, Kate. Thank you for calling. Leslie in Cottage Grove. Hi.
Hello. Thank you. Over the weekend, a friend of mine showed me a picture on their Facebook or something and said, geez, can you guess who this is? And I couldn't, because it was the person aged. And I guess there's an aging program out there that can make you look old. Did I hear that has a compromise in it, and that by visiting that site you may have infected your phone or computer in any way?
In this case, it was a specific program, and it wasn't necessarily infecting your computer, although it was gathering Facebook or social media data from the individual that decided to use the application. So, one of the things is, I'm kind of curious what I'm going to look like when I'm, in 30 or 40 years. So you basically log in with your Facebook account, you add this application, it ages your photo, but in the background, it's also collecting all the other data you have in your Facebook account, so it can reuse it in a variety of ways. So basically, some of your data could have been exposed, although your actual computer or your account, I wouldn't say, is necessarily infected. It's just that certain pieces of your Facebook profile could be somewhere else, because it uses some of the data in the Facebook account to perform that function.
There you go. Thanks, Leslie. Eric in Eagle, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I have a question. Is there any way, I do accounting for myself and my partners, but my problem is, to put any accounting program on, you have to use the internet. Is there any way to put a program onto a computer without using the internet?
And I guess the short answer is yes. It might be a little bit more challenging. A lot of software these days really is delivered by the internet. You pay for it on the internet, you download it, you install it. One option is to physically go into a store, and you can probably still buy media that is on a flash drive or on a CD or DVD. You might also be able to contact the vendor and they could actually ship you media. And that could be needed if you don't have an internet connection or you simply don't want to connect to the internet. So there are some options, but depending on the software provider, it actually could be a bit more challenging. Another option is to download it from a different computer, like let's say a library computer or somewhere else. I would say, you know, hopefully the software is safe and you've vetted that the company is a good company. But you might actually just need to download it from somewhere else. They might have not a whole lot of options. If I want to download a web browser, for example, I actually need to use the internet to do that.
Yeah.
It's not something regularly I'd go to a store to actually purchase media to do it. So it can be challenging, but one of the options is to use a different computer to install it, although it kind of depends on your situation, too, on why you might not want to connect.
All right. There you go, Eric. Thank you very much. Mary in Appleton, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
I am wondering the best way to deal with spam email. I used to read the message, scroll to the bottom, and hit the unsubscribe button. And then a friend of mine said, no, don't ever do that. That you're telling, you know, the place that this is a live email and you're going to get just end up getting more. So what do I do with emails I don't want?
That's a great question, and there's a combination of answers, which just makes it even more complicated. If a lot of times the unsubscribe button can be malicious in some way, it could actually be used to deliver malware. It could be used to collect your email, and so, you know, as your friend noted, to note that it is a real email address that someone's using. But in some cases, it's actually a valid way to unsubscribe. And so that's where it gets a little bit challenging. One thing you can do is simply delete or mark as spam in your inbox. A lot of mail applications will kind of remember how you've tagged emails and will start filtering them to the trash a little bit more aggressively. And over time, it helps to more proactively filter that email. Another option, which is a little bit more, a little bit scary because you'd have to change, would be to create a brand new email account that you're going to be using for day-to-day communications and just burn down the old account, which sometimes can be the easiest method just because once an email address gets out there in any way, shape, or form, a lot of groups will kind of share that content. So if one person or one company has it, a lot of different companies might get that information and use it in a way that you wouldn't want to. Otherwise, I'd say mark it as spam, delete it when you can. Your mail client or your email provider might help to catch up there. Another thing you can do, and there's a variety of documents out there, there's some scrubbing yourself from the internet kind of marketing platforms out there, and you can actually unsubscribe, which might scrub some of that data from these other services. It takes a lot of time, though, and simply just deleting might be enough. But if you're able to mark it as spam and not reply, don't click on the unsubscribe because it could actually do bad things. Those are good tips. The only downside is sometimes those links are valid. But if you do start filtering and denying some of the senders that are sending you email, over time it will help. But if you are really concerned and get a lot of it, if you know a dozen people and can simply tell them a new email address, that might be an option too.
Yeah, there you go, Mary. Lots of, could be a lot of work, but just getting out of it, if you've got, I'm thinking about all the people that I have company or friend-wise and so forth that are on my email accounts and letting them all know.
Yep, and that's a big challenge. And one of the other things is, you know, one of the recommendations is for anything you are a member of. So it could be your credit union, it could be Facebook, to sign up using a different email account. So if you have 20 services, sign up with 20 different email accounts, which sounds kind of scary in itself because it's 20 accounts to manage. But one of the things with all these services, sometimes these services share your data with other groups.
Yeah.
So as soon as you start using one service, you might find, I'm getting these emails from other things I didn't sign up for. Well, they could be tracking you on your web browser. They could have sold that information to somebody else. There's so many different ways for that data to get out there. If you really want a pristine mailbox, you could go that route of having a unique email address for everything. And for those personal communications, you don't use it for anything but personal communications.
Oh, man. Jesse LeGru, our guest today. Great to have him with us to talk about your computer and some of the issue we've been talking a lot about, hacked accounts and so forth, and how to deal with that. But if you have other questions relating to your computer, I hope you'll join in as well. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Speaking of emails, Kate emailed wondering, what do scam emails usually look like?
And they can look really, really simple or really complicated. I think one of the things I've seen is you might be looking for some kind of service and you might have a part-time job opportunity, or if you're looking for a dog sitter or something else. Like, they're asking you for a service that you might want, hoping you're going to reply and basically sign up for that service. And those are usually really, really simple ones where they're just kind of spamming a lot of individuals and trying to get anyone to reply and say, yeah, I'm interested in this. How do I sign up? Or it could actually be completely duplicating a different service and making it look legitimate. Usually it's going to be asking you for some type of information and asking you to click on something or reply to an email. And so they'll look like the normal emails you get on a day-to-day basis. It always depends on the individuals crafting those messages, but you are going to see a little bit of everything in terms of what those scam emails look like.
Yeah, they're a lot of times just the language isn't very good, and I mean the grammar and so forth. Some of the ones I get, I just eliminate them right away when I see the grammar.
Yep, and that's one good way to kind of filter that through. Another one is just look at the email address that's sending it to you itself. Is it a valid service that you recognize? Is it an email you expected? If you're getting kind of random emails from Gmail accounts about specific services, it's probably safe to ignore it. If it's from a company that you know, or it's from like a bank email address that you know, that's a little bit different. So knowing what those signs look like can be really helpful to help decide, is this a scam or not?
Yeah.
But you have to look at, you know, the language. Is it appropriate? Are you expecting it? Does it make you feel in a way like a little bit tense, like you need to reply? But is the email address itself, is it something you recognize?
I know somebody who, and then sometimes fate plays a role. I had a friend who had just been in to see about a loan at her bank. And I think by chance, she gets this thing from the bank about a loan, about the loan. And she responded to it, and it wasn't the bank.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened like fate, bad karma or something.
Yep. And that's one of the benefits of, if you were an attacker sending out these messages, doing it in a way that broadens the audience helps. So you can have one attacker sending 10 emails, each email looking completely different, but depending on your life at that moment, one of them is going to fit. And that's all you need. So you can spam it to 1,000 people. And even though you send out 100 or 10 emails per person, one of those emails is going to affect one of those people in some way, and they're going to be more likely to respond and just simply disregard the other 9 because they make no sense to them.
Karen in Nisida. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I have a laptop. It's a Lenovo. It's about 4 or 5 years old, and it's been gradually really slowing down over the past year or so. And I see that there is a restore function on it, and I'm just hesitant to use it because, you know, I'm afraid it will erase some of my data, or is this truly a safe thing that I can use to kind of put it back to normal?
And it's very possible it could help. One thing I'd recommend before doing any kind of restore is just make sure you have a full backup of your computer. Sometimes a system restore will, you know, restore your applications. It also may restore your data to a certain point in time. So you just want to make sure that you have all your data and you don't lose anything. But it's very possible that a restore could actually make things speed up if you do have some kind of software that's slowing your computer down. Another recommendation, if you do think it's software, is you could run a program like Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes. There's a variety of applications out there that you can install, and that could clean up some software that could make your computer run a little bit slower.
There you go. Thank you so much. Charles in Rush Lake, your turn. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Larry. So the guest was recently talking about using a backup as a defense against ransomware. And I wondered if you would recommend a backup hard drive or a cloud service for that. I purchased a backup hard drive a few years ago, not just to back up my files in case the hard drive crashed, and found it so cumbersome to use that I just quit using it. And but maybe that technology has improved a lot, or maybe a cloud system is really the way to go now.
Yeah, and I think you could go either way. Sometimes the external hard drive backups, sometimes the hard drive, when you buy it, it'll come with a program you can easily install, and it makes that backup and recovery a whole lot easier. Similar with a cloud service. I think either one can work depending on really what your use case is. One of the biggest challenges is if, you know, you do have ransomware on your computer and your external hard drive happens to be plugged in, it could also encrypt your backup. So that's a challenge where if you do backup your computer on a hard drive, you'll want to unplug it when the backup's complete, or have a mechanism to make sure that if your computer's infected, your backup doesn't get infected either. Normally, you're not going to have that with a cloud service where it's not going to reach out and encrypt your cloud backups. But it always depends service by service. So the cloud backup might actually give you a little bit more protection in terms of ransomware, and it tends to be a little bit more user-friendly, but you are generally paying for a service on a monthly or annual basis. So the cost over time is going to be a little bit more expensive.
There you go, Charles. Ed in Madison, hi.
I was going to use ask a similar question. I use external USB drives on my computer, and I was concerned about ransomware and wondering if they are involved in that, or are they immune to being encrypted by ransomware?
Yeah, no, it always depends on the ransomware. There's a possibility that an external hard drive may not be encrypted with ransomware. I'd tend to go on the other side and plan on ransomware encrypting any drive you have plugged into your computer. If I were to actually do it with external hard drives, I might actually do it with a pair of hard drives, which you could alternate on a weekly basis, which means that if you had one hard drive plugged in and you had ransomware, you can always go back to the second hard drive. It means your data is less fresh, so it might be 2 weeks old instead of a week old, but it gives you another layer of protection for backups. But I would anticipate if you have it plugged in and you get ransomware, I would plan on it being able to encrypt that external hard drive.
There you go, Ed. John in Superior, hello.
Hello. Question about a few months ago, I heard the Tesla executive is using this Google Auto Respond on his Gmail, I think it is. And I'm wondering, I have a Gmail and Yahoo account, and wondering about, I'd like to set it up for auto response, because I just get I get one email maybe that matters a day, and 30 that don't. And I'm wondering, would maybe they'd leave you alone, or could you set it up? I just don't get any emails that really seem to matter much anymore. What is your thought on that? And is there a way to erase? I've got like 2,000 emails I haven't read because I never deleted them. Is there a way to erase that somehow now, all those past emails? So a couple questions. I was just wondering if what your take is on those and how to set that up, if I could.
Sure.
So for the whether it's future emails or even the emails that you have in your inbox right now, you have not deleted. I would recommend, and this will be different on the service, but usually if you highlight those messages and mark them as spam, that's going to help for any future emails you receive, because usually it's going to note that these are what some of the spam emails look like, and there's going to be less of a chance you're going to get it into your inbox. So marking those as spam with your provider will help you in the future. And that might solve your problem, at least for the short term. You're more than likely going to get more and more of these emails as they come through. In terms of any kind of auto response, one of the things that some of the spammers might look at is, are there responses from the emails? And if the response is there is one, we're going to send you more stuff. We know it's a valid email, and we're going to send it and share it with a lot of other individuals so they can start sending you email as well. So my recommendation, if you do have a spam or some kind of email you don't want, don't reply to it. Simply mark it as spam and report it as spam to your provider. There's, depending on your email service, there's a couple different ways to do it. And you can also block it usually in your email client, but marking it as spam will lessen the likelihood you're going to get it into your inbox and will help over time. Worst case, if you have the thing where you get one email a month that's actually valid, maybe you look to create a new email account, burn it down, create a new email account, share it with the people you need to. It depends on how many people that are. That's another option, but I also understand that can be really, really challenging because well, there could be a lot of people you have to tell about that email address.
Yeah. And then just to delete, he was asking how you can just highlight it and delete.
Yep, you can just highlight and delete it. Or if you know they are spam, you can highlight and mark it as spam. Usually that will delete it in addition to telling the provider, hey, by the way, this is some other stuff. Sometimes what the delete button will do, that will actually also train for things to get automatically deleted, but it may not mark it with the provider as spam, which means they can use that data to actually filter it out of potentially more people's inboxes if they mark it as spam as well.
Veronica wondered in an email if she should pay for security software, or is the protection she got on her PC enough?
It depends on the age of the computer. Most computers these days will come with built-in software. If you have a Windows operating system, it will come with Windows Defender and a lot of other technologies. Any technology you get, any product, is going to have gaps. So there could be a benefit to using additional security software. It just depends kind of on what your goal is. If it's for antivirus, that's one thing. But if it's for protecting your network traffic, using something like a VPN or virtual private network, that could be a completely different service. So there's a benefit to having some additional software. Usually the base antivirus is going to be built into the latest Windows operating system.
And on that note, Jesse, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us today. Look forward to your next visit on November 11th.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you again. Jesse LeGru, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group, and he'll be back on November 11th. Well, happy to welcome Mike Crane with us coming up next, and also Keely Baltina, a new host on WPR, to talk about Wisconsin Public Radio. That next, here on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller.